You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
To the Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that helps people with cancer discover and navigate the many options that now exist to support their own care and improve their well-being and treatment outcomes. All of this comes under the banner of integrative medicine, a model of care that brings in lifestyle and complementary approaches alongside the conventional options from the health services. I mentioned navigating there, and this has always been one of the major issues of integrative medicine. There are such a myriad of options, and for someone intent on staying alive, they can all seem to be essential, which naturally leads to overwhelm, stress, and overall not a great situation for healing. What is lacking is a means to compare the efficacy of approaches and the degree of relevance that they have to particular cancers. This needs trials, and as many people are now aware, trials are hard to come by when there are no massive profits to provide incentives. One of the most important developments that have mushroomed during the years since I set up Yes to Life has been the gradual reclamation of healthcare by the public. A new spirit of becoming expert in one's own health and issues, of self-care, self-help techniques, and of direct information sharing amongst members of the public. Right in the flow of this, a man of the age is Mark Sean Taylor, a data specialist who, having faced a cancer scare himself, decided to use his skills to try to assess the relative merits of integrative approaches to cancer. And he set up Patient-Led Oncology Trials, a Facebook group. I'm speaking to Mark over the internet about what he's up to and what he's hoping to achieve. Mark, and welcome to the Yes Live Show.
Thank you, Robin. Pleasure to be here.
So I'm looking forward very much to hearing a lot more about an initiative that you head up, which is called Patient-Led Oncology Trials. So I wonder if you start out with a kind of elevator pitch to tell us in just a few sentences what it is and what its intentions are.
So what I noticed a few years ago was after Jane McClellan's book, How to Starve Cancer, there was a huge number of people using her science and her book trying to work out how to hack cancer. And I saw the value in that data. So my idea was to go out and find human data on these integrative approaches and find out what was working and what was not. So I had a background in technology and managing programs, and I thought I'd bring that skill to this space and attempt to try and work out in a quantifiable way, you know, which of these cancer treatments was working and which not.
Fantastic. So all the stuff that's not generally being evaluated, you're going to have a go in there.
Correct.
All right. So to me, like, this is a really exciting initiative and one I think many people are going to welcome with open arms, as this is kind of cancer science for the people who need it most, the people with cancer. So I wonder if you'd say more about the kind of motives behind the initiative. I mean, apart from the obvious and central goal of finding some answers to cancer itself, what other issues are you aiming to address that are not being covered by the immense mainstream investment that's ostensibly in looking for those same answers?
It's taken a while to, and I think anyone who has a cancer scare like I did, you go into this world and you assume the conventional world has all the answers. You know, I think that's the default that most people go through. I wasn't a person who had much interaction with the health service, and I would say most of my viewpoints on how the medical world worked was based on Netflix programs and things like House.
Right.
And you assume it works like it is in the TV. And you enter the medical world, and it's not like that. It's very system based, procedural based, and then when you enter it, I think you come with a perception that there's more nuance and more decision making that the doctor's got than the health system's got, and then you realize it's basically just a system, and it has rules, and the system sticks to those rules, and you know, the first year of me researching this, it took me a while to unpick kind of actually how the system worked. And you know, I think most people go through this in this journey. After a year, I was like, aha, okay, right. So if it's not passed a phase 3 trial, it's not going to be available to me. And a lot of the drugs that have efficacy in earlier stage trials don't have patents and can't be made profitable and never get to stage 3. So there's a huge number of therapies out there that, you know, evidence is showing aren't getting into mainstream hospitals. And, you know, that to me, as a person who worked in data and technology, it was like, aha, well, there's massive value. Patients are trying these things now, but no one's capturing that data. And if we can get that data, you know, I think it's valuable to society.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so you kind of mentioned a cancer scare for yourself there. Can you give us a little bit of the backstory, your personal backstory? How did all this come about?
So, you know, it's a stage of my life where not intentionally, but I put myself through a period of time where I did everything you shouldn't do to avoid cancer.
Right. So,
I'd had a couple of stressful years working in Sao Paulo in New York. I'd returned back to Hong Kong where I was living. And I decided to do an MBA, just take some time off and recover. And then I was requested to go and work on a project in Istanbul. I knew it was going to be a difficult project. So I rejected it. I was begged to go and work on it. And eventually I succumbed. And I found myself unintentionally doing an MBA and also working 80-hour weeks and flying every 2 weeks between Hong Kong and Istanbul.
Wow.
Living in a hotel, working. So I had no time to rest, constant stress, hotel food. Subconsciously, I found myself, I wasn't aware of it at the time, I was using alcohol as a stress management tool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it slowly started being introduced. Only when I look back, I realized that it was actually, I was using it as a mechanism to manage the stress. And then about a year into the program that I was running, I ended up in hospital for a week with a mental breakdown. And then developed stomach pains that continued for another 6 months. You know, the typical journey someone goes on in this with MRI scans, they couldn't find anything. I went to Mayo Clinic. They found some suspicious areas on my pancreas. The biopsy came back atypical, which means inconclusive or, you know, certainly not a definitive cancer. At that time, I started doing some research into alternative treatments and options. And I realized there was these new tests developed by biotech companies to detect circulating tumor cells in the blood. Mm-hmm. And it came up positive, very, very low levels. You know, given I'd been through this process very recently, I knew it was very, 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 very early stage if anything developed. And, you know, it came up very early stage. So I've never had a definitive diagnosis. I'd say I was in most people's terms, a very, very early diagnosis. And my oncologist at the time wouldn't treat me because he said, look, we don't have enough evidence on these tests, yes, to treat you. We're not going to put you through chemotherapy. So I was left with no option but to go into alternative medicine. And I actually met a surgeon who I was discussing actually having pancreatic surgery. And he said, look, I got to tell you this off record. I've seen patients get responses going to Mexico to some of these alternative clinics.
Was off record.
So I was like, okay. So I started researching it. I spent 6 months reading. I took some time off work, recovering from the breakdown. I saw a couple of doctors that were recommended to me. And you know, both of them, interestingly, gave me quotes for $150,000 for treatment. And I was like, oh, wow, you know, you've suddenly gone from, you know, assuming the medical world is, you know, beautifully organized and sensible to having 150,000 bills thrown at you. And I asked for other patients that had been treated you know, scientific studies that showing it works, and they couldn't provide it. And then at the same time, Jane's book was being released and I saw a Chris Work interview, and then I got introduced to the online space and I realized there was a big gap in human outcomes to these experimental treatments, and then that's how I started the initiative.
Interesting. What was it that made you kind of, you were looking outside the box very early on, which most people don't, of course. They wait until you know, things have gone wrong already in the standard treatment before they start looking outside the box. But prior to your being pointed outside the box by your surgeon, you were already looking around. So what was it?
I think I was lucky they turned me down for a conventional medicine. So after my oncologist said, we're not going to treat you, you know, I was like, yeah, but there's something definitely wrong with me. You know, I mean, I had symptoms. There was some evidence there. I was like, well, I've got to do something.
Right.
And then I started reading, joining online groups, understanding some of the mechanisms also at play from a business perspective. In terms of trying to understand why they weren't treating me, and then understanding what was required to get something into phase three trials, and then looking at some of the things that were being done in the experimental centers and understanding why they were not in standard of care. And then it all made sense to me logically. I was like, okay, well, there's not a financial mechanism to allow these things to get into standard of care. They do exist. There's evidence to back them up. And studies are expensive. So even a phase one safety trial, you know, with 10 people can cost millions of dollars, you know, and, you know, that might be 10 people, you know, it's not that difficult to catch 10 people on these online groups and say, let's see how you do and monitor your blood work.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So, you mentioned the test that you did there, the circulating tumor cells. Do you want to just tell people who had never heard of it before what it is you did there?
Okay. Well, I think this is a very interesting topic. So what's happening in the medical world now is these biotech companies are becoming like technology companies. And they're now able to look at the body in a very, very detailed way. And also what's happening is because it's a technology, it's constantly being updated. Medical knowledge is now deemed to be doubling every 3 months, whereas 1950s, it was 50 years. So these biotech companies aren't bothering putting their technology through standard of care because they know with 18 years of clinical trials, which is typically what's required to get into standard of care, it's the old technology in 18 years. So there's many now technologies being developed to identify cancer early. That are going through trials, and you know, the one I specifically did just searches for cancer cells that they can identify in your blood that are floating around. You know, I think there's some evidence now that even at a very early stage, you know, less than a millimeter of a tumor, the cancer cell is proliferating cells into the bloodstream. You know, they can capture that now. They can even take the cancer cell, break down the DNA, and correlate that to a particular cancer. So, you know, this is a very advanced side of medicine that's developing on the sides, that, you know, if you step outside of standard of care now, there's many options. John Hopkins have just developed something. There's the Galleria test. There's about 10 different vendors around the world at least doing these CTC tests. Mm. But you have to step outside of your standard of care to get it.
Yeah, it's you wonder how it's all going to work out if it's moving as rapidly as you're describing, and yet, yes, the medical profession's as slow as ever when it comes to adopting anything new. It's you know, there's a bit of a sort of collision situation happening there, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what, you know, that's what I'm seeing, and that's what I'm trying to, I suppose, jump into is seeing that opportunity where. Mm. I don't, you know, when you've got this, you know, it's a technology-based world that's happening now. 18 years to run through a clinical trial, you know, particularly if your life depends on it or your family's, exactly. Someone in your family on it, you're not willing to wait. I mean, but the problem's going to be, it's, you know, there's a good reason for standard of care clinical trial process for experimental medicines. Because you do want to make sure it doesn't damage the body, and yeah. Some of these chemicals potentially very dangerous. So there is a need for this long, careful, well-considered clinical trial process. And then particularly, you know, if you're going to roll out a synthetic drug globally to hundreds of thousands, millions of people, you need to make sure it's consistent. But I think where there's the gap now is particularly on the natural chemicals, you know, high-dose curcumin. To me... I think the regulation needs to start considering lowering the bar to get some of that medicine into standard of care. And actually, strangely, because I work with clinics in India, the Indian medical system is now setting up a separate regulatory system for Ayurveda medicine, which is not as expensive and not as strict. And I think that needs to be
brought
through.
That is absolutely needed. Totally agree. The sort of safety factor has to be brought into this. If something is a very low risk, it's already known to be a low risk, then the bar should be well down on for a toxic chemical. Yeah.
Yeah. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so in describing the group, you say we are currently a team of technologists, data scientists, medical professionals and business leaders who are looking to form a broader collaboration with people who are willing to help. So do you want to tell me a little bit more about the expertise that the group features?
So at the moment, it relies on volunteers. It's a small, I mean, there's been various volunteers that have come in and come out throughout the years, but we're starting to formalize a more solid group. So we've got Gabrielle, who's a researcher. We've got Julian Johnson, who works in marketing and PR. We've got Vidur and Sanjeev, who run a software company, who help us out on the development of the tool to help collect the data. I've now got to a point. So initially I collected data from a random sample of 100 pancreatic and bile duct patients. And in that process, I started realizing those going to these experimental clinics were doing better. And I started analyzing people going to these clinics, these experimental clinics that can offer kind of a wide range of things like high dose vitamin C at the lowest end to, you know, what's happening in the space, because there's biotech involvement, very advanced cancer vaccines, neoantigen cancer vaccines, and it's probably the highest end of immunotherapy, but they've been offered privately. Even Mayo Clinic now are offering these treatments out at a fee. Right. I started becoming an expert in this space at quite high technology offerings, and now what's happening is clinics are coming to me for help.
So, kind of thing are they coming to you for? To find out where the greatest successes are?
Yeah. I work with about 5 clinics. So they come to me for, you know, general advice on what treatments are working, advice on where to source various drugs. Even one clinic in Romania has come for advice, because if you understand how the regulation works, in a lot of countries like the UK, for example, the Cancer Act bans a lot of these treatments. And that's, you know, pretty similar in Northern Europe and a lot of places like that. So what you end up with is this situation where the most advanced clinics now are in developing economies or less developed economies. And their business model is actually focused on the people with money from the developed economies. So some of them come for me kind of business advice in terms of what the patient's looking for, what do they need to have on the ground to support patients coming in. How do they market it? So it's, you know, a range of services that I'm now starting to move into.
Fascinating. What an interesting position to find yourself in, as a kind of an expert for all these people who are actually using these medicines.
Yes. So I'm working particularly with a clinic in Valencia now, Medica Mediterranea. And, you know, I came up with an idea that I've been selling to anyone that's willing to come to me and market it to clinics, is that I by accident, through this process, I've come into contact with probably 50 different doctors around the world through the patients I speak to. Mm-hmm. I've got their protocols.
Right.
And I've researched the science. I understand the science. I've worked out where to get the drugs. So I can literally go to a clinic and say, look, I've got all the protocols, all the science. I know where to get the drugs. I do see this. One of the limiting factors for a lot of patients is cost. And they are expensive at the moment. So what I'm trying to do is find low-cost opportunities for patients and clinics that can open up the bar for more people.
Well, it's bound to happen. As soon as the information on what works is more readily available, someone is going to set up in a situation where the economies work out and you can offer a cheaper service. I mean, you know, health tourism is a real thing these days, isn't it? People travel a long way in order to get much cheaper treatment.
Exactly.
So it will happen, won't it?
Yeah.
It's rather fantastic because, of course, every single clinic on the planet who's trying to do something different is constantly kind of battered with, like, where's the evidence, you know?
Yeah.
They're, all the time they're asked the question, they're one clinic, they have loads of patients who are all different, you know, they don't have, you know, 25 nice patients with the same condition all the time that they can run some test on, you know, and even if they did, it would take them years. So it's impossible for each of those clinics to come up with really good data like that. But to have a central resource that can kind of collate all this stuff and they can refer to not only for their own practice, but also to kind of give authority to what they're doing.
Exactly.
Is amazing.
Yeah, it's a trust. What I'm realizing is both the clinics, when I speak to the doctors in the clinics, they have an issue with trust, because what the patient sees is, you know, you go out and you look at clinics in Mexico, you look at clinics in Germany, and they all offer, you know, science. And the patient can't establish whether the science is legitimate or not.
Right.
And the clinics are like, you know, what I'm doing is legitimate, but how do I get the patients to trust what I'm doing?
Right.
The patient's got the same problem. So the idea is a trust layer in the middle. That's the kind of long-term thing, is that
Brilliant.
If you're a doctor
Brilliant.
That's got an idea that works, will come to me, all right? We'll give you the tools to capture the data. And if it works, you know, we'll communicate it to the patients.
Brilliant. Wow. Very exciting. All right. Well, so kind of along with all this, though, it's fairly easy to hear the voice of the critics out there in the mainstream talking about dangerous amateur middlings in the highly complex world of cancer science. risking lives, et cetera, et cetera. How would you respond to them?
Well, one is I'm treating myself. So, you know, if someone wants to kind of go into an argument, they're saying like, selfishly trying to look after my own life. So that's one aspect. I mean, I have the data now. I can introduce them to people who have been told there's nothing left that can be done, who are doing well. People who've cured their cancer. You know, we're at a point now where we're at the cusp. You know, there's a few criteria that needs to be met from what I've seen for an excellent response. And it's one of the most difficult messages to get across is typically what happens is people only consider these clinics at the end of their journey. So if I focus on pancreatic, you know, the FOLFIRINOX is a highly toxic chemotherapy and they're put onto gemcitabine. By the time they've gone through two rounds of chemo, they're horribly beaten up. You know, they're, you know, physically, you know, you can look at their blood work, their hemoglobin's off, their white blood cells are off. And, you know, we don't see people getting great response at that end because a lot of it's immunotherapy based and the immune system's pretty much battered by the time they're looking at these clinics. But from the data I saw from the study, that those that were going early when their immune system was intact were getting really good results, you know, if they're going to the clinics. And I do know it's a sensitive space for what I'm dealing with. We've got lawyers in every jurisdiction that I'm working with. So Wendy's helping me out as a lawyer from the US, and I've got lawyers in the UK and Spain and India.
You need them.
Yeah, it does need to be done in a legal way, and I need to be and we need to be careful with the messaging. But you know, this world exists at the moment. It's, you know, you could claim it's a bit dodgy right now. Exactly the issue I had where I went to two clinics,
right,
charging me $150,000 without any information.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I'm doing is picking up treatments that are not necessarily dangerous but have side effects. So some of these alternative medicines do have downsides. You know, if we can get the data solidified, we can start quantifying those side effects.
Very good. Great. Yeah, well, absolutely. This is the kind of thing, that's not really well known. You're absolutely right. And to have it centralized in this way is like magic. So you've got this private group on Facebook, which means people have to apply to be members. What are the criteria if you want to actively join the group?
Either a patient or a caregiver or somebody who works in this space. That's broadly who we want in the group. And then I mean, it's not become an ideal platform because what I've been doing is kind of telling a story of my findings over time. And when new people join, they miss the story from 3 years ago.
Right.
So the new ways of getting the message out, so this calls like this are very useful.
Hmm. So are you thinking of moving from Facebook? Are you thinking of doing something in addition to Facebook? Or what's the your thinking?
So a website's been built, which I hope to launch in the next couple of weeks. It will communicate kind of our objectives and what we're trying to do. You know, services to clinics. It's easier from a legal standpoint for our organization to face the clinics. So my primary objective at the moment is connecting with clinics that are willing to work with me. So if there's a doctor out there or a clinic that believes they have something that works, and that's confident enough to say, look, I'm willing to expose my data, you know, and it's not just one of the problems that biggest problems or errors I see patients making is they're not very good at statistics. So they'll see a single person's responded and everyone will flock to that approach, but they'll not ask the question, how many people tried that approach? What we really need to know is, you know, with which cancer, with which condition, how many people tried it and how many people got a response. So that's the kind of data I'm looking for clinics to give me. So I'm at the moment, I'm contacting clinics around the world to say, you know, are you willing to work with me? I'm getting connected through, you know, people in the group to willing doctors. I'm a bit bandwidth constrained at the moment, but that's the objective over time. And then, you know, if the lawyers think it's doable, what I'd like to be able to do is almost provide a layer between the patient and the clinic and have patients who come to our service seek advice, and then I can provide the data to the patient and say, look, this is what we're seeing. You know, you could use based on the data.
Yeah. Well, no reason why not. That kind of thing, giving people information, there's no law against that. And very useful information too. So they're still essentially making up their own mind what to do. So, should work. Brilliant. You said, you describe them as being willing to help. So exactly what? I join your group. What do I do?
So there were two studies that I did. The first one was just take a random sample of 100 pancreatic and bile duct patients. That was the start of the structure. And what I established within that group were categories of people doing better. So those attending these experimental clinics early were doing the best. There was a second category of people I found with not many people who were basically setting up clinics at home, which is a growing trend.
DIY,
The third category, I'd say, is the bulk of patients in this world, which are those doing off-label drugs, supplements, in combination with standard of care. Those doing standard of care on its own. And then there's a fifth category that weren't doing too well, those that just doing off-labels and supplements. You know, I don't see a huge amount of evidence that those stepping away from standard of care altogether are doing well. So... Mm-hmm. Based on that, I realized that, there was a small category of people attending these clinics earlier doing the best. And then what I did is started focusing on people going to these clinics. So my focus now switched from the pancreatic study into just understanding outcomes from these clinics. So if someone is interested in going to a clinic, a serious interest, they can go into my group. They can post actually within the thing. And I'm willing to share my opinion and reference them to people who've been to clinics. I understand the science. So that would be the starting point. I got to a point where my bandwidth became difficult to handle the amount of volume. I'm looking to start formalizing that in the next month or two to make it more structured with legal agreements.
Okay. Sounds great.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
How long have you been active? How long has the group been running?
Three and a half years now.
All right. Well established. And how many people have you got in there?
About 3,500 at the moment.
Right. Okay, so maybe it'd be nice to focus in a bit more on exactly what you're researching. You've spoken a bit about it. You're saying you're focusing on clinics now, and the just because of your early research, I'd like you to say a bit more about that first. So you actually said some very important things just a minute ago, which were to do with how you perceive people were doing from your first trial by taking different approaches. And you grouped them up. Were there five different groups there, I think?
Yeah, five broad categories I found from kind of, buckets that I could associate with. So,
yeah.
There's a group of small exceptional responders, people with PanCAN living between 3 and 5 years or more. And you know, two people in the study. The first, strangely, the first purple on the study, Emma, who came to me, who tested the software, she was given 3 months to live. She didn't want chemo and she wanted to visit a clinic. We discussed some options. I suggested one doctor that I thought was pretty good. And she cleared her cancer, 15 tumors, 5 centimeter liver tumor.
Wow.
No chemo and cleared her cancer. So it's like a signal.
That was quite a starter, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's like, wow, this is more serious.
Well, it shows what's possible. I mean, of course, I've come across lots of stories like that as well over my time. And yeah, those stories, you know, they don't really, well, you hear about them more now than you used to. That's the good news. Since Kelly Turner and things, you know, these stories have come out a lot more than they used to. But they've always happened, of course. You know, people have gone off and done something in Mexico and had a remarkable response and gone back home and got on with life, you know. And but now they are getting out, and they should do, of course, because these outliers, well, what are they saying? They're saying, well, look, something completely different to the standard, you know, 6 months you've got to live story is possible. And people need to know that.
Yeah, yeah. And then I started looking at data, you know, so I saw other people. Terry Ma was another one who went to Cleves Clinic, and a similar story. You know, they'd seen friends go through various treatments before and seen someone respond at Cleves Clinic, and they took him there. Similar, you know, liver was covered in tumors, complete response, and he was still going 5 years later. And then what I also saw, because of this dynamic, and I blog about it, is those doing the same but later on in treatment, and they weren't doing anywhere near as well. You know, the problem for most is you have to be very aware of this world going into the diagnosis to go to these clinics early, because it's, you know, it's expensive. All of them were spending more than $100,000.
Wow.
You know, off the bat, go, you know, I'm gonna throw $100,000 into experimental treatments.
It's a gamble, isn't it?
Yeah. So part of it's getting that message out on that. And then, you know, one of the things that's happening now is I'm giving advice to people at the far end, who have already been through treatment and, you know, in a bad state. And I think there's value in a service, even telling people it's not worth it, because yes, we are seeing at the fringes these treatments working very well, you know. But I've also seen people spend a huge amount of money at the far end of treatment, and you know, you don't want to be getting your family into financial situations at this stage. So I almost think there's value in service and saying actually it's not quite there, and certainly given your state, it's probably not worth risking it.
Well, that's very interesting. And of course, the other thing you said that was very interesting was what was happening to the group who were not doing any conventional treatment, which is kind of like you're in the kind of land of mythology here, where there's a certain group of people who think that on a kind of philosophical basis, it seems to make sense to them to go that route. And but that's not based on data or anything else. It's just based on the fact that they don't like the conventional approach, full stop. And that's a problem. I mean, you know, we deal with that all the time because, of course, we're about integrative medicine, and we're not trying to dissuade or persuade anybody in either direction. But, you know, in my time, I've seen people, you know, not a huge number, but a certain number go down that absolutely alternative route, and they can do okay for a period, but it's only for a period, it seems to me. I think of them as being too alternative for their own good. And I see people at the other end of the spectrum. I think, well, blimey, you could be doing so much better if you just adopt some more of the more integrative approaches and not be so conventional. Yeah. But, you know, that's just my opinion on seeing people, you know.
Yeah, and my study backed up that, you know, and I saw people try just doing off-labels and supplements and diet. And I see very, very, very few people with active cancer getting a response with that approach. And you know, you meet many different personality types. You get those that are very pro the pharma world and very anti it, you know. And I do think it's the right approach is a balance of the two. It's knowing how to integrate, you know. And And if you do go the standard of care route, which most people, you know, given their financial situation and the evidence we're seeing should go, but, you know, building an affordable approach around standard of care is for most the right decision, because, you know, very few people can afford or are willing to risk $100,000, $150,000 to fly to a foreign country. You know, if you've got two kids and a job, it's not an option for many people.
It's a tough call. Yeah, no, absolutely. It would be a massive risk. But, yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's really interesting anyway, that you're beginning to see a picture emerge here, which is actually, you know, you're telling an important story there to people, which is it could really help steer them in a better direction.
Yeah, and there were some other, just while we're on this, there were some other patterns I would see, and they're backed up. You know, I think Kelly Turner's book was completely validated in my study.
Was it? Right, excellent.
You could see if someone was psychologically struggling, you know, and if you look at Kelly's book, I read it. It's one of the earliest books that I read.
It's a great early book to read.
Yeah, but I was recommended by a clinic I went to, and I was a skeptic. I was a deep skeptic of this world. And I read that book and went, not enough science for me. I think it's rubbish.
Right.
What it really is, when you understand what she's saying, is a guide to life.
It is.
You know, have
absolutely
a community,
right.
Have suspicion. Mm. You know, and I think if, you know, when you see people who are not aligned with what she's saying, you're struggling, you know, and I think now you need to be strong for this, whatever route you go. Whether it's experimental, whether it's standard of care, you're going to do better. And this is proven by studies. If you can get yourself, you know, mentally stable, if you're suffering from which a lot of people do, an anxiety or depression, I think there was a study that showed the likelihood of a 5-year survival was 45% less if you had a diagnosed anxiety or depression.
Massive.
You know, I think that's and the integrative doctors I meet, they all rectify that. They say, look, if your psychology is not there, it's just not going to work. And I think even I think Dr. Block in the US is one of the leading integrative doctors in the US. He refuses to take patients who won't get psychological help.
Wow. Right. Well, that is important. And yeah, Kelly Turner's book, just as people who haven't read it know, it actually talked to extraordinary survivors, a lot of them, and found out what they felt had been key to them in surviving so long. And then she sifted through the, I think there are 80 or 90 different possibilities they came up with. But amongst those, there were initially 9, and then she expanded it to 10 things that every single one of them said that they did. And interestingly, nearly all of those were not in the realms of the kind of practical. There was, you know, use supplements was in there, or and change my diet radically is the other one, I think, which was really practical. But all the rest of them are much more to do with your state of being and relationship to life. So,
correct. Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting.
And I think, you know, that came out in my study. I got to a stage where I could almost, you know, in a conversation with someone who'd come to me, I could put them in a category and go, you know, they're going to do well or they're not going to do
really?
Well. It was literally easy as that. And the doctors say this to me as well, and I don't think enough people focus on the psychological aspect or the spiritual aspect, and I think that's probably needs to be done simultaneously and with as much attention as the medicine. And now I think the most interesting studies that are now happening in this space is Joe Dispenza, who's now looking at the gene expressions, looking at the blood work of patients going through his 7-day retreats he's doing. And he's about to publish some studies. And I know of patients who've had regressions on 7 days of meditation and prayer.
Right.
Now that opens a whole, it's going to be a complex medical thing to look at, because if you're now, I think if science can now show that if you can, you know, meditate and eat well, and now they're now actually showing gene expression changes in the hundreds happening in these states that people are probably getting into in Kelly Turner's book. It's effectively saying you're getting hundreds of medications.
Right.
Dime. Yeah. You know, but the average cancer patient can't get there, you know, because what I see with cancer patient, if you delve into it, a lot of them have had a difficult life leading up to the trauma, similar to me, right? So I put myself through tense physical and psychological trauma to get to my state. And when you interview patients and you see their lives, you can almost pinpoint, all right, that was the period where things got out of balance. And then what you have is someone who was not in balance, and then they have the cancer diagnosis, and they're totally spun out of control. It's very difficult to get to it. So it's not easy for a lot of patients. And I think there needs to be a big discussion around how someone who's at such far end of psychological unbalanced gets back into a healthy state. And that's probably where I see myself going longer term. I had my mental breakdown during the process of the scare. I was in that state. I lost balance completely. I couldn't function at work, and I actually had to put myself on a psychedelic therapy retreat in Jamaica. I'd seen the studies from John Hopkins. It was an 80% effectively a reversal in anxiety death anxiety from a psilocybin study. And I did this, and literally from a 7-day retreat, I'd never felt happier.
And it's amazing. I've interviewed people about this stuff, and the sooner we can get this stuff to people, I mean, you look at the mental health crisis that we're having at the moment. God, do we need something like this that actually works?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the science is, every study that's coming out in the space is knocking the ball out of the park. You know, and it seems to be consistent, whether it's alcoholism, binge eating, smoking, death anxiety, it's an 80% remission from a very simple therapy. I mean, it needs to be done. I see increasingly people are aware of it. I wouldn't advise anyone to do this on their own without guidance. No. It's complex. It's as complex as cancer, I'd say. You need to go through someone who's experienced in this space. But, you know, I'd say from what I'm seeing, that's kind of what people need to do at the start.
Right. Interesting. Well, very interesting advice. Okay. Well, look, we've not got a lot of time left. I want to sort of talk about the whole arena of medicine and trials, the sort of big picture here. So we've already talked about the fact you've got technology racing ahead, you've got medicine just plodding along, you know, doing its thing there. Huge gaps there. We've got another huge gap within medicine whereby some kind of things that go wrong where that technology is at play. If your eyes failing you in some way, you can have the most extraordinary surgery, or if your hip gives out, you can get a new hip and it works. You get your life back just like that. The most extraordinary things being done with robots and lasers and God knows what. And so all of that seems to be right up there with the science. Here we are in chronic medicine, chronic disease. It's a completely different story, completely struggling, failing to really address the situation largely, you know, that's what it seems, and causing a lot of suffering as well. So it's crying out for a new approach. And I see increasingly people from the patient arena moving into this kind of sort of the self-care space, the DIY, let's find out for ourselves, let's go down another route and get the information we need, let's get some other resources, people like yourself, you know, you're a new resource for people with cancer. And these things, if they turn out to be successful, in the way that you're just finding things that work, you know, you're simply looking for things that work, and that's what people want. How is this all going to play out, do you think, in the arena of health, healthcare?
Yeah, it's a very good question. What I sense is going to happen in the next, say, 10 years, you know, which is most people's horizon. If you've got cancer, you don't have time to wait for the system to fix itself.
Right.
Is I think what you're going to have is... standard of care will exist, you know, and if you look at particularly in a lot of countries after COVID with social health systems are really struggling. And I see actually cancer care, particularly in the UK, you know, the services just can't be supported with the funding and the resources they've got. So unfortunately, you know, it's not what I want as an outcome, but I think what's going to happen is you're going to have a privatization of good healthcare. You're almost gonna, you know, if you've got money, You can pay for the expertise. You can fly to a clinic to get the treatments. I think that to me is inevitable. And I can even see it in the States. You know, the fact that Mayo Clinic are charging $120,000 for a neoantigen vaccine, you know, that's a signal of where things are going.
Hmm. It's not great, though, is it, for the population at large? Because you say most of them have lost their job because they've got cancer. You know,
exactly.
And they're just absolutely broke. Of course, we're helping people like that all the time in one way or another. And that they're who we speak to a lot of the time. So, you're right. It's not a great direction for them. It does mean things move on and that treatment gets better. But we've got to find a way of delivering to more people, really.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I do see happening, particularly for those in society that I think are most deserved of these treatments, is GoFundMe's working really well. I particularly see mothers of young children going out and do GoFundMes, and I'm in touch with a patient who's a 15-year-old kid whose mother raised £150,000. For our son's treatment, and I see lots of cases like that. So that's one option, but it's not a great option, but it's a form of charity.
It is an option, yeah.
I do. There's some great resources out there. So once you go online onto Facebook, there's Linda's group, Always Hope for Cancer. There's there's Jake's group. There's Abby's group. There's a lot of online resources now which are free. And I think that's a good starting point for many. If you can't afford an integrative doctor, the information is pretty powerful. Educate yourself, get your psychology fixed. I think the patients are going to need to take ownership of their health increasingly. And I would advise people, because a lot of people struggle to read, say, clinical papers or struggle to read some of the books. Is find someone close to them who can guide them through that process, because otherwise it's very difficult.
Hmm. Agreed. Well, look, you've just given me an opportunity for a quick plug. Of course, we've been helping people with what we call personal fundraising schemes since long before the word crowdfunding emerged. And it does work. It's a very good method. Us advantages through to doing it with us, in fact, which are that rather than asking a load of people to just pay money into your bank account, which is effectively what a GoFundMe is, they pay it to us and we manage it for people. So we actually make sure that the money that's given is used for treatment in the way it should be. So anyway, just a quick plug for that, because I think it's one of the great services we offer.
I wasn't aware of that, so I'll look into that. So a lot of people sort of like, so
yeah, anyway. All right. Well, look, just about the end. So you started with an elevator pitch, and maybe you want to make a bit of a plug at the end for why people should join you in your trial, and lure them in there, and also maybe to the practitioners who you're interested in.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a business background. I've worked in finance and industry for 25 years, and to me, it's actually a bit of a supply and demand issue here. So. The solution to bring the cost down for patients is greater supply of these options and thinking through ways of doing it cheaper. So my biggest plug is actually out to well-meaning doctors who believe they have a solution that works, that's affordable. So if you're a doctor out there who thinks they've got something that works, who's willing to expose what they do and provide the evidence to me, please come to me. Likewise, if you're a patient who is looking to go this route, join my group, ask a question, and everyone that comes to me, I learn from. So every bit of data of someone who goes to a clinic or comes up with a unique approach to my group, and then it's not just that I may be able to provide data that helps them. You know, they help the organization by providing their data.
Right, it's two way. Brilliant. Okay, well look. I've loved hearing about your initiative. I think it's fantastic. The kind of self-help thing is very much in line with what we're doing at Yes to Life, trying to get some options in front of people, trying to get them to help decide what they need to do for themselves. So I wish you huge success with your endeavour, and I hope you'll come back in a year or so and tell us what's happening.
I would love to. I'd love to.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Likewise.
Cheers.
Bye.
Kudos to Mark for rolling up his sleeves to help people with cancer to find a way through the maze they find once they start to look beyond the box of conventional care. The broad findings he already has have huge potential to guide better outcomes. Thanks for listening today. In keeping with the last couple of shows, I'm playing you out with an extract from an album that's being sold in aid of Yesterlife, Songs Our Parents Sang by Mirren. You can sample all the tracks at mirren.com, that's M for Michael, Y-R-R-E-N for November, mirren.com, and download or order a CD from there. Wishing you a lovely Christmas break filled with friends, family, love and intimacy. Do join me again next week for the very last Yesterlife show of 2022 here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Sparkle and shine, never a tear, baby.